Okay, quick question. When is the next fast day?
Sunday.
Sunday. Okay. What's it called?
The 17th of Tammuz.
Excellent. 17th of Tammuz. Shabbos of Tammuz.
What time does it start in the morning?
That I have to check up. I really don't know. I would say
like
probably about 5
o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, 4 maybe. So I thought for tonight, we would talk about fasting in general. Again, I don't pronounce it the way the Brits pronounce it, fasting. I'll never learn how to do that, but fasting in my old Brooklynese accent. What is the significance of fasting? Is it significant? Is it something that we want to recommend? Is it good for diets? Maybe that's a good idea. Is it radical? Is it too far out? Is it too extreme? Does it require piety that goes beyond
conditioning?
And that's what I don't know. I'm just trying to finish a question, if you don't mind, and then I'll answer your question.
No.
So what I'm trying to say is, how far do we have to go with the idea of fasting? That's what I want to know. Okay then. So the Pele Yoetz actually addresses this question.
Rabbi, did they turn on the AC?
They turned on the AC.
All right, so I'll close the window.
I would just close the window. Let's see if the AC works.
Okay.
I didn't realize that this whole class would be about air conditioning. I would like to teach, and if people would come a little bit earlier and then talk to me about air conditioning, I wouldn't mind. But I would like to start the class on time, whenever possible. Okay. Having said that, and with a prayer to God that the air conditioning should satisfy everybody, which it never does, by the way, that's for sure.
Well, I'm happy about it. What?
You'll be happy if it works.
I teach here
on an average of 5 hours a day in this classroom, and I can tell you air conditioning is not a simple matter. But let's see, maybe we'll get lucky.
Okay.
Amru Rabosenu. Let's get started, Rabosai. Good?
Yeah.
What is our... Oh, no. We're still talking about the air conditioning. Is that it?
No,
okay. Are we ready to get started? Okay?
Go for it.
Good. Let's go for it. Let's learn a little Torah. Okay? Amar Rabbi Seinu Zichrono Livracha, what is the attitude of the Torah towards fasting? Are we into fasting? It sounds like it's very anti-physical, anti-material. It's aesthetic. It's something for the other religions, you know, whose holy people get very extreme, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And very pious. Kol Misana Nikra Kadosh. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Tainis, his entire tractate in the Talmud, it's dedicated to fasting, and the Torah and the Gemara establishes that if a person fasts, he's called a sanctified holy person. And not only that, the Chazal tell us, Ashrav, how lucky, how fortunate is someone who can fast for his sins. Now, if I tell you that you fast for your sins, so what greater mitzvah, what more general mitzvah does fasting fit under? Because I'll be honest with you, with the exception of Yom Kippur, the Torah doesn't mandate fasting. So it has to be part of a larger mitzvah. What mitzvah is that?
Tshuva.
Because he says he should fast on his sins. That means that he's going to be able to fulfill the mitzvah of tshuva. And the method to fulfill the mitzvah of tshuva is going to be what? Fasting. But not only that, he says, fasting, moreover, will help a person to avoid sin. Okay, that's called shmirah, that's called protection against sin. And he says, you might ask me, well, how does fasting help me against sin? And the answer is, with the word skula, you'll see that on the third line in plural skulot. The word skula is an impossible word to translate. You can look in Art Scroll, you can look in all your translations, I'm not impressed. There's no translation of the word skula. Skula means a power that's metaphysical, that's inherent in something, that cannot be defined, cannot be quantified, and in fact, it might even be anti-logical. You might even have some sort of a negative reaction to it. Why would fasting be a good thing? He says, because of the skulos. There are a number of different things that happen as a result of fasting, and they're all very good. And why is that? Because there's a power of evil out there. You see that the Peleoets, who lived about two centuries ago, was very much influenced by the Kabbalists, who believed in mystical concepts, that when you look at an air and you think all you're looking at is air, H2O, but no, you're looking at a lot of different things out there. They may be microscopic and they may be metaphysical, but they're out there. And those forces have within them the ability to bring you down, to contaminate you, to depress you, to pollute you. And that's called the Sitra Achra, the other side. And that other side gets weakened by Tinus. Somehow when we fast, all these forces that try to attack us from the outside, they don't have the koach, they don't have the power, lidovek, to penetrate into someone who's fasting. Not only that, he says another thing, another benefit of fasting. You can see that he's absolutely pro-fasting. You know, thumbs up. Al yedei Tinus, Yavoli day, another. Fasting somehow brings a person to recognize that he's a low being. Instead of being all, you know, pumped up about how great I am, instead he becomes humble. We've had many lessons here in this room on Tuesday nights at 7:30 about the Midah of Anava, how that is the hub and the center of all the Midos, of all the good character traits. And there's a school of power, some sort of metaphysical power in fasting that weakens the body. Ki yakir mi hu ha'adam. He begins to understand who he is. You know, if he's all filled with food and enjoying, you know, life, he builds himself up. He thinks he's here, you know, for all posterity. He's great. But you know what? That's not what we are, and that's not who we are. We are really physical, and we're very vulnerable, and we are weak. And if we keep that recognition in mind, then we won't get so conceited and arrogant. Shebimniyas ma'at pas, with the limitation, if he limits somewhat even his intake of food, yutash kocho, he can weaken these forces, and therefore hashori betanis, if he's in a fasting situation, a fasting mode, eino boli de nisayon. He will not be tested because there are no forces of evil that are powerful that are trying to trip him up and test him. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that he's created a test for himself, namely the fasting, and Hashem says, you know what? If he put himself into this test and he's successfully fasting, then Nikra Gibor, God says he's powerful, he's disciplined. HaKovesh Etz Yitzro, our definition of a heroic personality is someone who controls the forces of evil around him that try to tempt him. And therefore, he's Roy Teshchina. It's appropriate for him to have the Shechina on, you know, come close to him. Not only that, listen to the power of tefillah as a result of fasting. We've been talking about tshuva, we've been talking about overcoming the Yetzirah, we've been talking about the Midah Vanova. There's another side benefit, and a very, very important one, for fasting. And that is tefillah. His prayers are on a higher level. There's somebody out there called the Mekatreg. The Mekatreg is the prosecuting attorney who tries to tell the heavenly courts, don't accept his tefillah. He doesn't deserve. Don't listen to them. Don't pay any attention to his prayers and his petitions. And now that he's fasting, the Mekatreg, this prosecuting attorney, cannot have any impact on him. These are all the metaphysical inherent powers of skula in fasting. Not only that, here's another great benefit of fasting. When a person sins, he deserves to be punished. That's called Yisurim. Yisurim are all sorts of psychological anguish and physical anguish. Once he fasts, he indicates to God that he's accepted all the suffering in life. Bi'ava. Now here I have to say a few words. There are two ways and modes of serving God. One is called Bi'ira, when a person is afraid. In other words, he's not self-motivated. He is just afraid of influences and the power of punishment. Here, though, when he accepts on himself willingly a fast day, and how much more so on Sunday when we're obligated to fast, if we can, we're going to talk about the issues of fasting, then he's actually involved in the mode of Ava. Ava means it's not that someone is bludgeoning him and he's compelled from the outside because of any mandate. He's doing it out of love. Then he tells us another thing, that a man who's fasting goes even above the level of the angels. The angels don't have the temptation to eat. They eat when they have to, maybe angelic food. We used to call it angel food, but they don't really have to eat. But a human being has to eat. And if a person overcomes that disability or that dependence upon food, he's in a fasting mode, then he's greater than the angels. Not only that, this is unbelievable. I don't know how many benefits there are to, you know, we should have a quiz question afterwards. Who can write up 10 different benefits of fasting according to Pell Yoetz? Here's the next one. He himself, his own physical body, becomes a carbon. He becomes a sacrifice. As if he was being brought in the Beis HaMikdash on the Mizbeach, his chelev, his dam, the different parts of his body that now are reduced, like the, you know, the energy is burning them up and he's not refilling them because he's not eating. And it's olal rech nichach. It goes up in a sweet aroma in front of God like all the sacrifices. And then finally he says, in tainis, if he's in a fasting mode, then he dedicates himself to yafashbeish b'masav. He tries to re-examine his actions. V'yachzor b'tshuva v'yis'ana l'kapara. He now has achieved atonement and tshuva through his fasting. And at the end of this big, long paragraph, he writes that the greats and the giants have told us that a person who sins will gain tremendously from fasting, and he overcomes his needs and his desires. And now, in the balance of this presentation, the Pell Yoetz is going to quote an amazing anthology of sources to prove how many of the greats in Jewish history would dedicate themselves to fasting. The first on the list is David HaMelech. David HaMelech, King David. He writes, Birkai kashlu mitzom. My knees are weak because of my fasting. One of the great Tanoim at the time of the Mishnah was Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar made a statement that once one of his cows went into the field of his neighbor and started eating. And he didn't make enough of a protest about it. And as a result, the cow ate up a certain amount of pasture. He says, as a result, how many times did I fast? I fasted at Shehushcheru Shinav. His teeth turned black from fasting. Rabbi Yeshua says that I am embarrassed from the fact that my body is affected so much by tinnitus. And he meant to say that he doesn't look so aesthetically appealing. Rav Huna, he fasted. Why did he fast? Because the ritzua of his tefillin, he wasn't careful about the strap that goes around, you know, there's a strap that comes around both sides of the tefillin. He wasn't careful about that. It started turning inside out. You know, it has to be in the black, has to be on the outside. So he fasted for 40 fast days, just because his tefillin were not exactly proper. And he goes on to say that if you study the words of our rabbis, you'll see how many of them fasted. And he says, Vehein Emes, there's a paragraph here on the bottom of page 541, don't get a mistaken impression, don't think that tshuva and fasting are identical. Don't think that a person could fulfill his mitzvah, his obligation to do penitence, to do tshuva, because he fasted. No. The ikar, in order, the main part of tshuva primarily is charata, meaning he has to feel regret of the past to such an extent that God in heaven will testify about him that he will not repeat the sin. And he tells you where to find this. Not only is the thoughts of tshuva and the commitment to repent and do better critical, But the Gemara tells us that if a person gives money to a woman and he says, I want to marry you on the condition that I'm a tzaddik gomur, I'm an absolute saint, a righteous person, harezu mekudeshes, the kiddushin are valid, afilu im yadua shu rasha, even though we know he's an evildoer. Why? Because hirer tshuva believa, he had a hirer tshuva, he made a commitment in his heart that he will change his ways. And that is what tshuva is all about. So don't fool yourself into thinking that fasting alone is tshuva. Fasting is a method that could apply within the context of tshuva. Fasting is an offshoot of tshuva. Fasting might even be a method to achieve tshuva. But ultimately, tshuva requires the heart. It requires an absolute commitment. What about a person who finds it difficult to fast? Is there anyone here in this room who's willing to join me and raise his hand and say, I find it difficult to fast? Am I the only one in the room? We got two people. Okay, that's not bad. Two people. Now in the winter, I can get away with it. But in the summer, wow. It's crazy. There are some places, I happen to have been in these places, where it gets, the fast ends after 10 p.m. There were worse situations than that. I just was never in Helsinki. I was in Leningrad, but during the winter. And it's unbelievable. 10 p.m. I remember one fast in Canada. 10 p.m. almost. Maybe it was 10 to 10. Very difficult. So I found that the Peleoates addresses this issue in two places. One is on the bottom of what would be the equivalent of page 540, which is the first page that I gave you. And he says the following: we live in a generation of orphans. We are orphans compared to the earlier generations. And there's no one around who seems to be dedicated to fasting in order to achieve kapara and to atone for sins as part of tshuva. Kiyum ktsas, only a few people, may asridim, asridim means the leftovers from the previous generations, but the rest of the population, they barely fast. They don't want to fast. And you know what they declare? They declare the following: why should I fast? Did I kill anybody? Did I have any illicit relationship with a prohibited relationship? So you know what? They joke about it. They say, I'd rather eat for 10 days straight than fast for one day. It's so difficult for them to fast. Says the Peleoites on the top of page 541, Chaval al devishtakhin. That's a phrase that means, woe to our generation that we've forgotten what it was like in the earlier generations. I don't know if you men and women have ever met people who say this with a kvetch in the heart. Oh, where are the gdolim? Where are the greats that I knew in my childhood? Did you ever meet anybody who said that?
Either.
It's very common. Very common. Where are those greats? They're not around anymore. I'm feeling tainus tzibrei de misanah. Even a fast day like Sunday, which is tainus shivasa v'tamas, that's a required mandated tainus. Even that, they're not willing to fast. You know what they say? Kosh aleihem izach shvetz zayin. It's too hard for me to do it. I can't fast. And it became derech ish kol ayosha v'yenev yaseh. It's a hefkerus. Everybody decides for himself. Will I fast? Will I not fast? Am I okay to fast? No, it's going to weaken me. And he convinces himself he's such a good guy. He doesn't need fasting. He has no sins on his record plate. And I feel even those who do admit and they recognize that they have sins, they don't realize how severe their sins are. What kind of pagam, what kind of a blemish it creates in the upper worlds, in the universe. And therefore, all they do is say that I don't need a fast. They convince themselves that, you know what, I'm okay. I'm an okay guy. Have you ever met a Jew who says, I'm an okay guy? You know, I fulfill all the mitzvahs. I go to shul. I'm a member of my community. I pay my dues. I'm okay. Yeah, but what about a list of mitzvahs and averus? I don't even want to mention them here that everybody's guilty of. No, I'm okay. So he gives himself a pat on the back. He feels secure. He's not willing to face the music and acknowledge how severe some of his sins are. And therefore, he's willing to forgo fasting. And then I found another paragraph here where he addresses the issue of those who are weak. And this you'll find on page 543. If you can for a moment just fast forward to 543. On this page, the Peleioetz takes a radical turn. Until this point, he was discussing fasting from the perspective of tshuva and kapara, and from the perspective of tefillah, of prayer, how his prayers will reach on high and all those prosecuting forces will be, so to speak, shut down because he's fasting and he's praying while he fasts. Here on page 543, he introduces a whole new concept. He says, forget about sin. Forget about prayer. There's another reason for fasting. And that is Harotze Lizkos Lekisra Shel Torah. That fasting is a projectile, if I could call it that, that will move you towards the crown of Torah for himself and for his descendants. And I'll prove it to you, he says, from Shlomo HaMelech. The Gemara tells us about Shlomo HaMelech that he fasted 40 fasts in order to get wisdom. And at the end of this 40-day period of fasting, God bestowed upon him wisdom. The Gemara tells us about Rav Yosef. He too fasted for 40 days. And as a result, he became the great Rav Yosef, the great Rosh Hashiva of his time, who wore the crown of Torah. Not, I don't mean that physically, but figuratively. And not only that, the pasuk itself, Lo yamushu mipicha mipizaracha, which is a pasuk in Yeshayahu HaNavi, applies to people who fast. So forget about tshuva, forget about tefillah, forget about this whole list of benefits that would apply to your rank and file citizen who's afraid, and rightfully so, of all the forces of evil and all the prosecuting attorneys around him, and look how he could achieve bringing a karbon, being mechaper on himself. He tells God, I'm doing this out of love. He's memayit in his chelev and his dam, and he now suffers yisurim, and therefore God doesn't have to test him anymore. Forget about all that. What about a giant in Torah? Or at least a potential giant in Torah. Does he have to fast? And the answer is yes. But hein emes. This is the paragraph that I want to learn carefully with you in the middle of page 543. Shalemisha osek b'melech ha-shamayim. What about a person who is truly, genuinely dedicated to work on behalf of Shamayim? He learns Torah whenever he can. He doesn't necessarily have a job, you know, and 9-to-5 job. He's really dedicated. You're like 24/7. And he claims, "Hatainis mevatlo mimelech haShamayim." He's saying that all of his dedication to serve God is reduced. It's ill affected. It's diminished by the fact that he's fasting. And if you ask me whether his claim is valid or not, I'll tell you it certainly is. Because if you open up to Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim, Siman Tov Kuf Ayin Aleph, which are the laws of fasting, the Shulchan Aruch writes that Hamalami Tinokos, if someone teaches children, Eino Rashoilis Anos, we will not permit him to fast. Why do you think a person who teaches children, who can help me out here, a person who teaches children is not allowed to fast?
Well, they might need a little strength.
He needs strength. To teach children, you need a lot of energy. You see, I'm teaching adults, so I don't need energy. I don't have to burn any calories, right? I don't have to get excited. I don't have to prepare for hours in advance.
Well, at least
right?
You don't have to run after us.
I don't have to run what?
You don't have to run after us.
Well, sometimes I do in other ways, you know, but there should be a packet here floating around for you, Larry. I didn't know if you were coming or not. I would have had written your name on it.
Oh, okay.
That's okay.
You'll have a cake next time.
Who's bringing the cake? I'm bringing the cake?
Did you say that if you knew you were coming, you'd bake me a cake?
I didn't mean to say that. But if you put the words in my mouth, apparently...
Okay, I knew it was himself.
You know, these days I'm a bacher. I don't bake any cakes. My wife doesn't bake any cakes. She's in New York. So
What's she doing there?
My wife is taking care of a little bit of her mother. Who has some very heavy treatments. And I said to my wife, we spoke about skula before. So not only is Tainus a skula, but traveling far away from your work and your family is a skula of Arichas Yomim because of the great mitzvah Kibud Eim over here. So we all wish my mother-in-law a refuah shlema.
Amen.
Her name is Dvora Chana Bas Ratza. She should have a refuah. Ratza. I can't help you with that name. When our daughter was born and we wanted to name her after her maternal grandmother, whose name was Ratza, we had a problem. So we called her Raya instead of Ratza. Somebody gave me that idea. Anyway. So Amalani Tinokos, Eira Shailis Anos. Now we're not talking here about a public fast day. On a public fast day, everybody has to fast. So this Sunday, even if you teach children, you have to fast. But if it's a self-accepted fast that's not on the calendar, no, it's a no-no. Then he says the following. What about someone who's not teaching children, but Mishalome Be'iyun? He studies Torah in great depth. He needs a lot of intellectual energy to study the Torah. It means he's not just being superficial. You know, some people just read through the words and translate the words. He's saying no. He's asking questions and he's delving and he's challenging. He's really engaging himself in the most profound learning. Is hatainis mafsido she'enu yochel la'ayin? What word would you use instead of the word la'ayin?
Concentrate.
Concentrate, exactly. Thank you, Larry. That's exactly what I was looking for. He can't concentrate. The man can't focus. He is starved to death. Vatainis mevalbel mocho, and his ability to think clearly has been affected in a negative way by his fasting. Shmaitita, to learn a sugya, to learn a piece of Gemara, boi tzilusa, it requires clarity of thought. And therefore, we have an issue with regard to people who teach older people. And again, we're not talking about those who teach young children. That's an absolute commitment. Don't tell me you want to fast because of reasons X, Y, and Z. These are going to be your benefits from fasting. You're going to do tshuva, you're going to get kapara, your tefillah is going to be accepted, you will be able to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you took upon yourself this challenge, this nisayon, therefore don't give me any other challenges. It's a great experience for me. You cannot say those words. No one will allow you to do that because you're teaching children. By the way, teaching children is called what? Tashbar. Have you ever heard the word tashbar? When I was a child, we used to go out collecting for tashbar. Tashbar is Rosh Hashanah's abbreviation for Tinokos Shel Beis Rabban. There are so many halachas for Tinokos Shel Beis Rabban. And it could be that teaching Tinokos Shel Beis Rabban is even greater than building the Beis HaMikdash itself. For that, you cannot, you may want to fast. But that's like moonlighting, if you know what I mean. That's like taking advantage of your own desires at the expense of your ability to teach the children. But what about someone who teaches adults? Or what about someone who's learning be'iyun on the most profound level? Is he allowed to fast? I had a Rebbe who would come up with his greatest insights on the day of his fasting. Go figure that one out. He would teach us from 9 in the morning till 5 in the evening, non-stop, with 100 people in the classroom, and they were quite brilliant. I was like the lowest of the 100. I barely got in over there. And he would be fasting, and he kept going and going and going. Go figure that one out. You got to be above the physicality for that. But for most of us, you can't think clearly when you're fasting.
That's right.
And therefore, there's a machlokas haposkim, what to do. What comes first? Should he give up to some extent? Right, again, we're not saying that he's going to forfeit his Torah study for the sake of fasting. You know, he's going to fast every day for the rest of his life and just shelve his books. No, that's not what we're talking about. But we realize that in a qualitative way, he's going to forfeit some of his Torah study. It's not going to be the same. It's not going to be on the same level of depth. But on the other hand, we've spoken about the great achievements and benefits of fasting. How do we juggle between the two? So this one group of poskim say the following. You know what? Yeshlo v'chayv l'sanos. He has to fast. Afal pi shemizbato milimun. Fasting is a greater mitzvah and it's more of a pressing issue. It's urgent. Even if it means he's got to forfeit at the expense of his learning. And another opinion says, Yoseh tov sheyilmod, it's better that he studies Torah. V'toroso mechaperes olav. If he can't achieve the best kind of method or mode of kapar, namely the fasting, he'll get a substitute. He's got a fallback position that his Torah will now be a kapar of him. Says the Peleoites, you know what? Ani Omer. I want to take a stand on this issue. Peshar Dovar. Does anybody know what the word Peshar means? Or Pshara. Those who are learning Sanhedrin will know what I'm talking about. What's a Pshara? David, you're learning Sanhedrin.
I am. Go ahead, Mike.
Compromise.
Compromise.
Right.
Otherwise known as mediation. So the Peleoid says that between these two extremes, I would like to mediate a compromise. And what's that compromise? Yachos bazevagamise. He should hold on to it from both sides. How so? Don't forfeit tainus, fasting. Fasting is so critical. So b'ezo shana, he should dedicate 1 year, and during that year, his first priority should be fasting. Again, it doesn't mean that every day of the year for 365 days he's going to fast, but it means during that year he realizes he's forfeiting some of his learning. Oh, if not for a full year, let him designate a part of a year. Kagon, I have the best time of the year. Elul, Aseret Yemei Tshuva, and how much more shall Shovavim? Shovavim on the fast days, Monday and Thursday after the three regalim. Yisana. Oh, you're right. Sorry. Yeah. So he should be fasting. And Vimlo Yilmad Bi'iyun, even though he's giving up some of his Limud Bi'iyun, then Yilmod Girsa, let him learn other things, which are more superficial, that don't require such a matter of focus. During Elul, it's okay. He should learn the Zohar. Interesting. Sifrei Musar. Like the Peleoids. Tehillim. Let him recite Tehillim. Karbanos. Let him go through the parshios of Karbanos. U'bishar yimei shnei ha-chayav. But in the other years, or the other months of the year, yilmod v'iyun, v'nimtza zev v'zem iskayav v'yodah. Imagine how much of a pressing issue this was for the Peleoids. He couldn't decide between two polar extreme opinions. What's more important? Torah study or fasting, and he finally decided that you can't drop any one of those two. They're both so critical that he's got to find some sort of a balance and a compromise, what he calls a pshara. And now he quotes the Ravid on the bottom of page 543 with a very revolutionary idea. The Ravid is going to tell us that you can eat and still you're fasting. Isn't that a contradiction in terms?
Because if you eat less.
Excellent. The Ravid says, "Imemimachol sha'areflo." He has something that he loves to eat. I think the Brits call it sweeties, right? He loves to eat sweeties. Umoshech yado, and he decides to deny himself those sweeties. Be'emtachiloso, even though he's eating them, you know, he has all these great things in front of him. You know, let's say a person loves watermelon, right? So it's very sweet, the watermelon, and it's hot, so he loves the, you know, the liquid element of the water. It's freezing cold, everything's great. He loves ice cream. It's a hot day, and he's eating ice cream. I remember when I took my kids to Orlando, it was hot like the Dickens. And the only thing they had there at that time, I don't know today, this is many, many years ago, was that was kosher, was ice cream. Again, if you eat Cholav Akum, which we do, so we were okay. I forgot the name of the company now. Does anybody remember which ice cream has an OU on it? A very famous company.
Ryers?
No, it was maybe it was that. Anyway, they were selling it there in the park. You know, I'm taking what's the park called? The Universal
Disney World.
Disney World, excellent. In Disney World, I remember my friends. I was waiting in line for Dumbo. Dumbo is an elephant that goes around and around. Because my daughter was then, my Hannah was I think 6 or 7 years old, and it was so hot. We bought an ice cream, and I felt like the temperature in my body went down by 20 degrees. And a man says, instead of grabbing onto all these things, he's in the middle of his meal, Moshech yado b'emtza achiloso. And why? Because he wants to get credit for a fast. U'mechaper avanoso, says the Ravid, this will atone for his sins. V'nechshav, it's considered like a timus, it's considered like a fast day. Uke carbon, as if he brought a carbon on the mizbeach, and it's a kapora. V'yuchal lanos onem nafsho shelo lechol basar, he shouldn't eat too much meat. V'shelo lishtos yayin, or to drink too much wine. On days that are tachnunim, in other words, he singles out, let's say Mondays and Thursdays, those are days of tachnun. And he says that by doing so, by being mamayit, he will achieve a kind of a miktas, a substitute for a fast. Joe.
With the exception of Yom Kippur, the public fast days mark historical events.
The air conditioning. Yeah, go ahead.
Mark historical events. You know, the breaking of Babylon's breaking of the walls, the destruction of the temple, the fast of Esther, the assassination of a governor, right? Those are fast, public fast days. Is he talking about those days or separate days, not on the calendar? I committed an avera, a series of eras, right. I'm going to fast today. That's what he's talking about.
Correct.
He's not talking about Sunday.
Right.
Right.
Now, I want to talk to you a little about Sunday. Why? Because this Sunday is not only a fast day, but it introduces a whole new element in the equation that's going to go on for 3 weeks, culminating in Tisha B'Av. And we've spoken about the mitzvah of Tainis in terms of Kapara and Tshuva, we spoke about it in terms of Tefillah, in terms of Keser Torah, but now we're going to introduce a whole new element into the fast. And what's that?
3 weeks
of Avelus. The mitzvah of mourning. A lot of people don't realize that there are two categories of mourning, of grief. There is grief never for a loss of a close relative, and that starts with Shiva, goes on to Shloshim, in the case of parents, for a full year. And then there's a different kind of a grief and mourning. And I would say it's no less significant. And that is grief for events that transpired maybe 2,000 years ago. That is the mourning and the grief that begins in the period of Bein HaMitzarim, which normally would have begun on this Shabbos, but instead we push it off till Sunday. Is there any other time of the year where we commemorate a period of time with Avelus other than Churban HaBayis? Correct. No, I'm saying, I'm talking about there's a constellation here of four fasts that are all Avelus fasts. Okay, there's another kind of Avelus fast that's not connected to those four fast days that are spread out throughout the year, and that is the Omer period. The Omer also has an element of Avelus to it because of what?
24,000.
Excellent. The loss of 24,000 students. And in both cases, Bein HaMitzarim, starting with Shivas B'Tammuz, and the Omer period. We don't dance, we don't listen to live music, and in general, we diminish our sense of happiness and joy. This is the expression of Avelus. Now, I can't get in the mood for Avelus. I just experienced Pesach not long ago, Shavuos wasn't long ago, we had a Rosh Chodesh, we had a lot of good things were going on in my life. I had a birthday, and it was very nice. My children actually remembered my birthday. You know, it's good. Yeah, birthdays, I call it always kind of sweet and sour, because, you know, when you get to my age, you know what I'm saying? You know, birthdays are questionable, because you start counting the years until your next decade, which is 70, if you know what I'm saying. So that's already scary, you know, the countdown.
Somebody actually remembered your birthday.
Of course, today 70 is young, but...
Somebody remembered your birthday on Shabbat, they said, but you're not here.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you the truth, I had another great experience in the last couple of weeks. I hit a round number on Yeshiva University Torah, that's a site on the web. And I started 9 years ago, and I hit a round number. Anyway... what I want to tell you, I'm not yet in the mood for Avelus. Sunday, I'm going to start the mitzvah of Avelus. How do I get into the mood? So it's very interesting that Avelus for Churban is the flip, halachically, is the complete reverse of Avelus for one of the close relatives. In the case of one of the close relatives, you don't need to put a person in the mood. You start with the most intense level, which is called Shiva. In fact, even more intense than Shiva is the first day of Avelus. But from Shiva, it declines, correct? It goes down and down and down. In the case of Shavuos Batamos, we have to get ourselves into the mood so that this Sunday will be the kickoff. And then we have the 3 weeks, we end up with the 9 days, we have something called Shavua Shechalbo, the week in which there's Tisha B'Av. And I don't know if that applies this year, because Tisha B'Av is a Nidcha, but anyway, finally we get to Tisha B'Av, which is the apex. Now, what I find is that once I hit Tisha B'Av, it's very hard for me after Tisha B'Av. It's hard for me to get down. You know, I'm in such, you know, I turn on music in the car, like, I can't listen to, oh, wait a minute, it's after Tisha B'Av, you're allowed to listen to music. Now, I want to read to you something here in the name of the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham was one of the great poskim for Ashkenazic Jews, and he lived about four plus centuries ago. And he has the following statement. Let me just find it for you. Just give me a second. Oh. He writes the following. The Gemara in Tainis says, Mishenichnas Av Mematim Besimcha, that the real Avelus begins with Rosh Chodesh Av. We call it the 9 days. And then the Mishnah says that it gets more intense during the Shabbos Shechalbo Tisha B'Av. The Gemara says in Masechet Yevamos that even before that time period, the Jewish people were memayit biskehem, they kind of limited their amount of involvement, of lisa v'litain, of livnos l'nitoa, certain kinds of plantings, and certain kinds of buildings. We call this Netiyah Shel Simcha or Binyan Shel Simcha. There's no marriage. V'ein osin afilu sudas erusin. In other words, even though erusin, which is the first stage of marriage, is permissible, but we don't make a big festive experience. Okay. Says the Magen Avraham, Osur lasos rikudim umecholos. In other words, he doesn't mention right now listening to music. What he mentions is rikudim umecholos. That means going out and dancing. Mecholos means making those round circles. Remember the old horah, I think they called it, right? And he says the following, that when it says Lola Harbos Bisimcha, so it means the following. With regard to, just 1 second, let me just get this straight here. What time is that? I just want to time myself. Okay, good. We still have a few minutes. With regard to Bein HaMetzarim, the period that we begin this Sunday, for 3 weeks till Tisha B'Av, the Magen Avraham writes, also lasos rikudim u'mecholos. Right? You're not allowed to dance and make these circles, these horrors. It's interesting that with regard to Sphira, it sounds like the Magen Avraham might accept an even greater stringency, because he says, "Asur l'nagen kli zemer, v'lo l'shmoa muzika." Right, you're not supposed to listen to music. But here he adds the following: that once we assume that that's the case in Sphira, should it also apply during the period of Bein HaMetzarim? In other words, when you look into the Shulchan Aruch, you get the impression that during the Omer period we're not allowed to listen to music. But when you look at the Magen Avraham, as far as Bein HaMetzarim is concerned, he writes, also lasos rikudim u'mecholos. So we're not sure exactly whether or not Sfiras HaOmer and the 3 weeks are identical. What does the Magen Avraham say over here? He's saying that also lasos rikudim u'mecholos. Is he implying that there's some sort of difference between Bein HaMetzarim and Sfiras HaOmer? Because again, in Sfiras HaOmer we talk about not listening to music. Again, let's talk about live music, klezemer. Do we have a similar prohibition in the case of Bein HaMetzarim? That's what I don't understand.
Well, don't you also have the flip side of that? You're not supposed to be buying new clothing, right? Is that prohibition applicable during Sphira? I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't thought it was.
I would tell you the following. Which is more of a severe or a what we call chamur prohibition of avelus, is Sfiras HaOmer more chamur, or is Bein HaMetzarim more chamur? It seems to the Magen Avraham that with regard to Bein HaMetzarim, he speaks about rikudim u'mecholos. You know, that's a much more public kind of experience of simcha. Let's say I want to play music and listen to klezemer in my own privacy. Maybe it's not so public. Maybe according to the Magen Avraham, that wouldn't apply during Bein HaMetzarim, and yet the poskim seem to apply it during Sphira. That leads me to the conclusion that Sphira is more chamur, is more strict than Bein HaMetzarim. Because what I'm trying to suggest is that maybe in the case of Bein HaMetzarim, the avelus gradually increases. And when we start the period of Bein HaMetzarim, we are in a very, very low flame. I don't know. Let me read to you a tshuva here from Moshe Feinstein. He writes that Bimei, and this is also, you'll find in other Tshuvas like Yechavadas, that's what you say. Bimei Sfiras HaOmer v'chein bimei Bein HaMetzarim osur lishmoa klei nigina. So that the impression that we got from the Magen Avraham that he was more machmir in the case of Sfira because he prohibited listening to live music, but he was less machmir in the case of Bein HaMetzarim, here in these tshuvas of the Igros Moshe and the Minchas Yitzchak and the Yichav Adas, it would seem that for sure if you're not allowed to listen to music during Sfira, then how much more so you're not allowed to listen to music during Bein HaMitzarim. Ubevadei she'asur lishmoa klei negina v'yesh lahachmir b'mei Bein HaMitzarim. Kavo she'amru chazal mematim b'simcha. He says, afal pishem mutam ikra din. He says, maybe strictly speaking, let's say, for example, the whole year round we're allowed to listen to music, but during Sfira and Bein HaMitzarim, we're not allowed to listen to music. But we're not sure if, you know. So, like for example, if I were to tell you that Bein HaMitzarim is more chamur than Sfira Somer, let's say, for example, during Sfira I would allow you to listen to recorded music, I'm not sure would I be as permissible with regard to Bein HaMitzarim. I mean, the way that these tshuvas that I just mentioned before seem to formulate it, b'yamei Sfira Somer v'chein b'yamei Bein HaMitzarim asur l'shmoa klei negina u'biyoser yesh la'achmir b'yamei Bein HaMitzarim. It sounds like we're being more machmir in the case of Bein HaMitzarim. You know, in Sfira Somer, maybe we want to commemorate the loss of 24,000 students, and I don't mean to diminish that, but it's not the same as Churban HaBayis, which is all the tragedies that befell the Jewish people. Maybe we should be more machmir in the case of Bein HaMitzarim. And again, the nafkamina could be, the difference might be in terms of listening to music that's recorded. You know, you have these, how do you say, kaletot in English, these discs. You know, musical discs and so forth and so on. Maybe in Sfira, I might find a cool of it. Maybe in the period of Bein HaMitzarim, I would be more likely to be machmir.
But at a time that these, putting aside Moshe Feinstein,
were
setting forth these prohibitions with respect to music. Music was live music. There was no such thing as canned music. Electronic music, this was the only music there was, were people playing instruments
live,
singing live. You didn't have that option of, I won't listen, but I'll build it on my radio, right? There was no such thing.
Right.
So all of these things were live music in both instances.
I'm just saying that if the poskim are going to be machmir and they're going to tell you not to listen to kaletot, you know, all sorts of what was the word you used? Electric music or
electronic
music?
You know, things like the radio, the disc player.
Correct. So I'm just suggesting that I could follow the following logic that maybe we could be more makil during Sfira than we would be again if the whole purpose of Bein HaMitzarim is to get us into the mood gradually.
Right.
So I don't know exactly at what point you put your finger down and you say, well, now, you know, but it could be that by turning off these electronic musics that you really want to listen to, maybe that's already going to put you in the mood for the Avelis of Churma. I don't know.
But
just
there are circumstances when you can listen to the music, right? If it's for certain reasons.
Oh, I saw there were kulis in the poskim theater. I just answer your question. Kulis in the case of somebody who has to learn for a parnosa, how do you say, for a living. You know, they play music for a living or they teach music. I'm not sure if that's what you had in mind. What other case?
I don't know, something about if it's something you play while you're working just to...
Oh, maybe to calm you down or something to help you focus. You know, you're not doing it purely for the pleasure.
Is that not perhaps somewhat the equivalent of you love cookies, but you're going to eliminate cookies as a tshuva? Weren't you saying that before that?
Yes.
You said
right.
That for some people,
sweets.
That is the atonement. So maybe the electronic music, whoever gives up the electronic music is doing the equivalent.
Right, that's an excellent point.
I am roasting.
Okay, so that's what I want to just announce to the people here that the system here is not 100%. If you didn't notice.
Is that introducing a kapara or a...
I can only hope that we got a kapara for it, because I'm telling you, I roast in this room for many, many hours of my life.
Okay.
But if it's Hashem,
if it were next week, I'd say it's
Beit HaMitzarim. But we hope that the Mitzvah Hashem will be zoche to all these great schoolers that we said, and
maybe you ought to get a little fan for this room.
Again, if you're talking to me, Theda, I apologize. I'm just not good at those things. I'm good at coming in here with the people are sitting quietly on time, and I want to start Torah reading. If anyone would like to be zocha in great mitzvahs of chesed on behalf of the whole community here, come a few minutes early, bring your fan, or fix the air conditioning, or open the window, whatever you like. But allow me to just teach. That's all I ask. And with that introduction, I'm ready to teach Chumash, if you would like to learn something for the parish. Okay.